Good morning, citizen lobbyist. So what are we going to do? Are we going to start with that assembly meeting on Tuesday? Is that a good place to start?
I think so.
Okay.
Yeah, let's go there, Mike.
Okay.
So, yes, we did have a regularly scheduled assembly meeting. People should probably get used to the fact that the assembly is going to be meeting a lot as they launch into their budget season here. So the schedule, which I think I brought with me, we can talk about at the end, but they're going to be meeting just about every week here for a while. So lots of opportunity for people to weigh in with them. So online, we had at the table was everybody except Dr. Barbara Doty, who is excused. She's out of the country right now. And Mr. Culligan, who I think has been out of the country for most of this year calling in, but he was on the line calling in. So that's how the table sized up. The manager was back. The mayor was there. Everybody was accounted for. So they started out having reports from the cities. Both the mayor from Wasilla and the mayor from Palmer were there. Mayor Cottle was there, of course. They were taking later on the agenda a vote on selling the old Iditarod school site to the city of Wasilla. So he, of course, was there in force. He did give them some little updates from the city about a women's affair that's happening there at the their center,
Menard Center
there right. This weekend, and talking about the last Frontier Honor flight that left just Thursday, and also a little bit of an update on 911 and that they were on track, working well, playing well with both the borough and the city of Palmer. They thought they would be ready to go in June. Then we heard from manager Nate Wallace from the city of Palmer, and he gave a lot of little updates about the golf course being set up already, that they're already hitting 7 holes there, and they hope to turn on their 18-hole spigot this weekend. And then the golf carts a little bit down the road here as things dry up even more. It's really drying up nicely in Palmer this year.
Absolutely.
And Palmer's getting a cleanup. He's got all the streets pretty much swept, and they are put all their snowplows away, and they're holding on to their sanders for now, just in case we have some late snowfall, but not any anticipated, I don't think. The tennis courts are up. The MTA Event Center is available for rent, and they're going to have a couple of big events coming out. The Who Let the Girls Out next 7th event. Can you believe it's been 7 years already that's been going on, Mike?
I remember when it first started. Yes.
Me too. I think that was the first year I actually moved to downtown Palmer. So that's starting this next weekend.
Right. Let me add a parenthetical. I was over in Wasilla. I went to a meeting over in Wasilla yesterday evening. And as I was driving back, both within Wasilla, there were two or three street sweepers. And then as I got past out into the borough by Colony High School, there was another street sweeper. And, of course, the ones in Palmer have been sweeping streets. But these are large machines that go by with rotating brushes, and they do a pretty good job of taking up the gravel and dust, et cetera. But it's not only in Palmer, but this seems to be the time to do it. I was impressed with the number of sweepers that were out sweeping.
Yeah, and there is a lot of dust, so they need to get it up. So that's good that they're all out there working away. You talked about a car show that's happening May 4th through the 7th, and their official cleanup that will start May 13th through 14th. And then already, Mike, May 19th, Friday Flings start. Summer is just peeking around the corner here.
Right.
So that
right.
was a good couple of good reports from the cities. Then they had a little brief talk from the new superintendent, interim superintendent Monica Goyet. Talked about a lot of fun activities that are happening at the school. And about upcoming graduations already, May 8th, I think, is their first one. She also talked a little bit about an outsourcing for vote that was supposed to happen last night at the school board meeting, outsourcing the custodial and nutritional staff. I hear from my people that they have delayed that now. They,
right.
Right out of concession.
Until May, right.
Until May.
Yeah. Didn't get any sense of why that was happening, though, did you?
No, but more importantly, the next meeting really was scheduled to be held at kind of they're getting into their road trip thing out in Sutton, and now they've switched that around. And instead of the next meeting being in Sutton, where this will be taken up, it's actually going to be here at the school district building. So people
right.
should still have an opportunity to come out and speak out. And, you know, I'm hearing that they're hearing from a lot of people, but not enough people, on how people feel about the outsourcing to a private company of nutrition services and custodial staff. This, of course, was done, I don't know, how many years ago, Mike, was it? Maybe 8 years ago, eight or nine years ago?
Roughly that, yes.
Right, and they flipped it back. It's now back into union territory, and now they've put a bid out to get the same person, the same contractor that they actually took the contract back from, Nana, to be considered again for some savings. And, you know, just in all fairness to the district, they're looking at a huge deficit this year. The assembly hasn't told them what they're going to get. It could be less than what they got last year. They're asking for more than what they got last year because, guess what, they got more kids. And the state, well, we know what situation the state is. It could be as much as a 5% cut from the Senate. They don't know how that's going to shake off, and they've got to prepare for things ahead of time, and that's their budget is due, and they have to present a balanced budget to the borough, and so they're sort of at sort of an impasse here. So we'll see how that takes off. But I'm just letting listeners know, if they have thoughts about that, either way, they should be reaching out to school board members to let them know how they feel about that, what impact they feel it'll have in their community or in their own families or in the classrooms. And so you got another week to do that, a couple of weeks to do that. So that was sort of a little sideways segue there from the borough. So then they had a pretty good presentation from John Lee from the hospital. That was pretty good, Mike.
Yes.
Not sure. He was just there kind of giving an update on what's happened at Massey Regional Center. Started with its history. You know, the Valley was taken over from the Valley Hospital, which actually opened in 1952. I didn't realize it was that year. They talked about, you know, there's two governing owners, not only the Community Health Systems Professional Service Corporation, which is a for-profit, but also partially owned by the Matsu Health Foundation. And so, yeah, they've talked about their team. They have 714 employees and some medical staff, lots of volunteers.
And
it was a really nice little presentation.
Yeah, there were two things that struck me that stick in my memory. One was a statement to the effect that it is now too small and they're looking to enlarge into the future. And secondly, the question that was asked by a member of the assembly dealing with how they were handling Medicare, Medicaid patients, how the hospital was dealing with that. And I thought his answer was interesting.
How so?
Well, he did two things. Number one, recognize the problem that if you are an individual that is seeking medical care and you're going to be paying with Medicaid or Medicare, it is difficult to find a practitioner, particularly a general practitioner, or even in some cases specialists to serve. And the hospital itself has, I thought, taken the stance that they're trying to encourage additional physicians to be here that would be able to extend their practice by the use, as he mentioned, of auxiliary support in the not just a physician, but physician's assistants and nurse practitioners, et cetera. But I did not pick up from him a clear hospital effort that was aimed at finding a complete solution, if you will.
So I know a little bit about this, and you're right. It's really hit critical mass here of people not being able to either being in some cases fired by their own doctors who no longer take Medicare anymore. Not so much with Medicaid, because Medicaid is a statewide program, and the reimbursements are higher. So I've not heard a lot of Medicaid patients being turned away. But Medicare, which is a lower level and a federal government program that takes physicians longer to be paid, has become a real problem. And it's becoming, and a lot of doctors that did take Medicare have now retired, and there's leaving a huge gap. And also, and I think Mr. Lee did point this out, that the medical schools are pumping out a lot of specialists, but not so many family doctors. And that is because there's a huge difference in what a family doctor makes and what a specialist makes. And on that same line, the hospital is a for-profit hospital. So it is in their interest, I will say, and I hope you would agree, that for them to attract specialists who make a lot of more money to the hospital. And so maybe there is an effort on the side of the physicians, but of the hospital, but normally patients, you know, try to stay out of the hospital when they're going to their family practitioners. But for specialists, more likely they're going to end up in the hospital. So there is that. Yeah, it is a big problem, and he didn't really answer the question. And there are some modeling for that. I spoke with someone in Ketchikan not long ago where their hospital actually funded a program to open a clinic for family assistant practitioners and some nurses to hold a clinic to start seeing Medicare patients where they could still bill, but do it at a much lower level of profitability. So we'll see what happens here. The expansion they're talking about will not solve any of these problems. It's actually just putting beds on that third floor.
Right.
But they are planning to add another module down the line, which will add 25 beds that are dedicated to psychiatric and detox services. And oftentimes those are Medicare beds and insurance-based, so those will pay.
Sure.
A lot, too. So
he did make mention also of the clinic outreach that is nearly completed here, sitting next to City Hall in downtown Palmer.
Right. And another one up Kinnick Goose Bay that I had no idea they were building. Did you know about that one, Mike?
No, I had missed that somehow.
Either.
Right.
Yeah. So, yeah, they're going to add some emergency room treatment rooms. They're going to add operating rooms. They're going to add labor, delivery, recovery rooms. They're expanding their lab, their pharmacy, their auxiliary spaces, and you don't do that unless you're making money. So there's that. So that was an interesting presentation, and then they launched into the rest of it. They did have a small presentation from Manager Moosey about employee information, about how many people are employed by the borough as opposed to how many that used to be employed. There was a good handout. I would hope they'd make it available on their website, because I think people would be very surprised to find out there's so few people that work at the borough, actually, in comparison to other years. And when you think about how much our population has grown, it's a pretty stunning reduction in how many people we actually have employed, and might answer some questions about some frustrations that they've had that the borough hasn't done this or that, because they really don't have many more employees than they had since 2007.
Right.
So that was kind of that report, and then most of it was just kind of mundane stuff. Can anything that stuck out for you, Mike?
Well,
they approved some money to move over to fix the port. I thought there would be a lot more talk about that.
That went pretty quickly. I think there was the attempt to delay on a couple of issues, but the assemblies, and in particular waiting for Dr. Doty to return, but they basically said, we're ready. We've listened to these things. And
that was in reference to the school parcel that they sold to the city of Wasilla. I think that was Mr. Mayfield wanted to wait and give Dr. Doty a chance to get back, and they had already punted it, and the rest of the assembly, especially Mr. Culligan, who's strong, that's his district, and he's thought strongly that it should be taken care of.
Right. I think the speed with which they acted was impressive. I mean, they thoughtfully considered, they listened, they talked, they asked some questions, and they acted, and they were out of there pretty quickly.
7:30.
Yep.
Wow. Yeah, when you start at 6 o'clock, that's I would say pretty fast meeting. They did talk a little bit about their meetings in D.C., that they'd been meeting with the federal government, of course, trying to figure out the repayment on the ferry, on how that's going. They haven't really said what's coming out of that. They're negotiating on that. They also had a special session after the meeting, which so we didn't hang around for that, of course, because they don't say much after those type of things. But it was about confidential legal analysis of a sales tax confined to the Talkeetna Sewer and Water Service area.
Right.
They didn't come out and say anything about that. That's an old problem that keeps raising its head now and again, Mike, with the lack of funding that's going into what they need up there, lack of local contribution, I think, to the big problem with their sewer and water old fix up there. So
sure.
Maybe they came out and made some announcement, but we weren't there for that. So right. That was sort of the end of it. So let's talk about upcoming meetings, Mike.
We can do that. Go for it.
They'll meet Monday, April 24th, in Wasilla at the Menard Sports Center to talk about a public budget hearing, and that's so they can hear from the public about what's important to them. Typically, you get a lot of firefighters, you get emergency responders, you get hopefully some educators will turn out. The manager talked about giving a small presentation, maybe a 5 or 10 minute one prior to that. That starts at 6 p.m. And then on April 25th, they'll be back in the chambers. That's next Tuesday. To have a public budget hearing. April 27th, they will have a budget hearing in Willow at the community center up there at 6 p.m. That one was really well attended last year, but I think they were having a little dust up over fire service areas that brought a lot of people out. So we'll see who shows up for that. But the Willow community does a good job of getting the word out to people up there. So hopefully there'll be good attendance. And then they go back May 2nd to have a regular assembly meeting, and May 3rd they start their budget deliberations. And then they have on the docket May 3rd, May 10th, May 11th, May 16th for budget hearings. So they're going to be busy in the month of May.
Right. And we'll hope that by then the legislature will have made their determinations, which affects the whole process.
Right. And the clerk talked a little bit about the June 20th being the last day that they can schedule a meeting to introduce any proposition. There's been talk of introducing a sales tax along with the school district to try to raise some local funds to bring up our local contribution to our school district, which is much lower than most areas of the state, like Anchorage, Kenai. They've been talking about this. The mayor's been talking about it. So that perhaps could be on the ballot this time. July 17th, candidate filing opens for a couple of seats that will be open next year. The city of Wasilla, where Mr. Culligan is termed out, will be an open seat, as will Mr. Mayfield's name.
Right.
I think in Big Lake, he's up for another term, and that candidate filing closes July 28th. Goes right up until fall with what they've got going on. So yeah, a lot going on in the borough, Mike. Pretty good meeting, and we can talk more about the school district meeting. I wasn't able to go last night, but I will. I'm assuming you'll put it up on the
right. It'll be going up a little bit later today. The other thing that I'm trying to, as I remember the discussion on Tuesday, might have been a brief mention of the Pioneer Home.
Oh, yeah.
Because that I've discovered still has a little bit of reverberation around. I think Sarah Heath from the governor's office described in detail when we interviewed her the process, where it came from out of a budget committee meeting and all the rest of it.
Heard that yesterday. She did a good job.
Yes. And the biggest point I think I feel it's important to reiterate today is that this was a budget reduction in the larger account within which the Pioneer Homes sit. The amount happened to be roughly what it would take to run the Pioneer Home, so one could draw the connection. And a representative from the Department of Health and Human Services mentioned that, but there was nothing in the way of a proposal from the governor, who has been very, very strongly supportive of Pioneer Homes in general.
His own father was his
Palmer, right,
I think.
Right. And I think what this was a case of someone mentioning something at a hearing, essentially, or putting into a proposal that never was really approved or vetted in terms of how it would play out. But I think it does two things. One, it suggests that there are a number of things paid for by the state that are very much valued and are sensitive issues. Pioneer Homes are one of them, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And the second is how quickly you can lose track of who said what and who wants to do what and whether this is becoming a political football. There have been allegations they've been directed all around the place, at the governor, at the Senate, at the whatever, that this is being used as a way of leveraging one or another position. And the problem with it is that when I've asked some people who have raised the question of, is the Senate, is the governor, whatever, attempting to close the Pioneer Home, you have to go back to the whole, through the process. And then they get, because very often the only thing that's done is someone has heard someone say that this body or person wants to do something, and that's where making sure that reporting and a careful history helps to understand what's actually happening.
So I haven't read it yet, Mike, but I noticed this morning there was an article in our friends Alaska Commons has one on the political football that the Pioneer Homes ended up being, and I think it may be worth the read. I find them to be pretty darn accurate in knowing the politics of what's going on. So I'm looking forward to reading that. That all kind of played out while I was gone last week.
Sure.
Which kind of makes it so I felt like I was a little more objective to watching it. And it was pretty evident when it first sailed that there was more to the story, and I think that's a good lesson for everyone. While there were some local politicians rushing to judgment that the governor had made this drastic move to close a Pioneer Home, as the story played out, there was much more to the story.
Absolutely.
But the bell had already been rung, and that's really, really too bad. And what I find really amazing about this is there were beds closed at the Pioneer Home last year with budget cuts. We have empty beds right now in the Pioneer Homes presently because of budget cuts that have taken place. And no one's really howled about that so much, even though there are thousands of people reportedly on the waiting list to get in.
Right.
We could have more people in our Pioneer Homes, but they haven't had the staffing. There is a staffing requirement, and everybody wants adequate staffing if they have a loved one or friend in there. And we can't put people in our homes because we don't have employees there, and no one was really that it hadn't really gotten much.
Well, I suspect that there may be more attention paid for that at given what's just happened. So there's a good spin that can come out of this
Same thing with education. You know, people don't having the thought of having 40 kids in a classroom doesn't really resonate with you, but when they start cutting football and they start cutting basketball and all the extracurriculars because there's no money for it, people will wake up when they really should have woken up when there were 40 kids in their kids' classrooms.
Right.
So that's the way it works out. Before we get off, Mike, I have to stop, and I want to talk about something that I think is really a neat event that's happening. I forgot earlier, next Thursday, AARP, which disclaimer I'm affiliated with, is going to hold a Stop Scams fraud event here at the Palmer Annex. It's the first one we've actually ever done in the state of Alaska, and it's here in Palmer. It's limited to 40 people because if you've been to the Annex, it's not a big one. So you do need to go online to register. Maybe we can put a little clip on our webpage about it, Mike. But they need to go to a URL to RSVP so they're known that they're coming. But it should be very interesting. The BBB will be there to talk about protecting yourself from identity theft. That's a big deal right now. There'll be some talk about utility scams.
Sounds like a good time. Yes.
Yeah. So okay. Please go to the Alaska AARP website on Facebook or Alaska AARP on Facebook, or I'll send this on to you, Mike, to post.
Okay. Well, thank you very much. Thank you, Citizen Lobbyist, today.
All right.
Have a good day.
You too. Bye.
Bye.